Greetings and welcome to Maroos Monday, the official podcast of the Maroos Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by Jacob Kanzler. And Jacob, you know, I was just thinking the other day that I can't remember a summer that has been this dead. I mean, we're wrapping up the summer and we're going to start into session here this coming week. But isn't it amazing how there has literally been no huge news that has happened these last 2 months or so?
Yeah. One thing I want to say is that I feel like it took a little bit for the news cycle to kind of dry up like it did. I think we're still covering some bill signing, some things well into July. But no, you're right. I think the news stream is kind of slowed to a trickle here near the end of August.
I'm complaining or anything.
No.
But let's think about this. Let's go back to like when we can't count even years, because even years we have state elections, and so obviously it's going to be somewhat busy, right? But let's look at 2015. We had Cindy Gamrat, Todd Corser, and we also had the transportation funding debacle. 2013, we had Medicaid expansion sucking up our time because the Senate Republicans pushed that to the super brink in August. 2011 was Snyder's first year in office, so he had a lot of things that were still carrying over and the euphoria of complete control again. 2009, 2007, we had budget shutdowns. I think we got to go back to 2005 since it's been so dead.
And that's before my time, so I feel like I can't expend on anything about that, because my time, I know last summer was busy. We were still kind of seeing the Flint water crisis fall out, and again, an even year, like you said, so we had elections, and you know, 2015, you mentioned, of course, for Gamrat. So, and you look at the stories that we have been covering, I mean, there's always seems to be like one kind of, you know, dominant issue that we're talking about every day and getting people to weigh in on. And I don't know what this says about right now, but the biggest story this year has been trying to get Foxconn, a company, to come to Michigan, and a veto override on a sales tax on the difference on auto trade-in. So it's like, these are not the weighty issues of like the Flint water crisis or Medicaid expansion or, you know, even, you know, packages to save Detroit schools and the city of Detroit. I mean, the height of the news stories have been elevated by the vacuum in a way.
Well, and again, not that I'm complaining or anything. I think we can use it, right? Oh. Kind of like a recharging of the battery.
But you know, it's like this, the seasons, you know, like so when you get to summer, you've been waiting all winter for summer and then it's too hot and then you get to, and then you get to the winter and then it's too cold. And so, you know, we start complaining about, you know, you have that date circle on the calendar when the session's out, because the pace of this town is driven by the legislature. Even my beat covering the administration and the state agencies, it just seems like there's more stuff getting churned out while the lawmakers are in town. So you always have that date circle on your calendar as to when the session will be out and things kind of die down. But then after a while, when it gets starting a little slow, we're all looking at each other wondering what to do.
I know somebody who's not going to mind the fact the legislature is coming back in a session. That's Mike Malott, because that means you're not going to have to go spend extended time in the library for a while.
Well,
digging up research projects.
I have gotten to know the Michigan Library fairly well over the course of this summer, but actually, I don't mind. So,
all right. Well, we're going to have something to report about soon, and probably on your beat, Jacob, the Michigan Civil Service Commission. These rule packages that appear to be driven by Civil Service Commissioner Jace Bulger has gotten finally some pushback from labor. We've been waiting for this.
I mean, I think they're trying to rally the troops, the unions. I mean, they've kind of like resurrected the coalition of state unions. You know, they're kind of coming off as a unified force, the five major state employee unions. And it'll be interesting to see what they do to kind of, you know, gain public support for their position, saying that these rule changes are going to severely affect how they can collectively bargain and affect how workers can get their own rights for conditions in the workplace. If they can send that message far and wide and make a show of it even before the Civil Service Commission meeting in September, we'll see what happens. I don't know what they can broker behind closed doors or in the public square, but certainly there are probably enough supportive commissioners to support these changes.
There are four commissioners altogether, three of them being Republican or independent Snyder appointees. And so you would presume that he would have the votes to limit the number of subjects that state employees can bargain over. But from that point of view, you could say, well, why do they have unions in civil service jobs anyway? Isn't that what the civil service is for, is to protect the spoil system and protect state employees from getting pushed around and having their jobs threatened by politicians?
Yeah, and you're right. It was described as like a double protection. You know, you have civil service, and then you also have the unionized workers. So it should be interesting to see how the debate goes out. I mean, the state and Jay Spolger have kind of talked about just this convoluted process and like so many things going to grievances, and just kind of like the system has gotten a little bloated from all the different things people have to negotiate over. And the unions are more like, no, actually things are going to be more complicated if we don't negotiate these things. And so it'll be interesting to see what prevails, or if there's some kind of compromise or something. But you look at the numbers on the commission and what's going on, and you know, the real question is what will be done to kind of combat these in a meaningful way.
You know, Jacob, if we've been looking for things to write about here at MERS, one of the things that we've been looking at is courts. And I think after covering some of these cases involving the legislature, I have a new appreciation for what Senator Arlen Meekhoff is saying when he doesn't want open disclosure of documents for the state legislature. What I'm talking about is this Tesla suit, and also this suit that Mark Brewer has brought on the legislature to try and get them to redraw the redistricting lines, the congressional and the state legislative district lines, saying they've been gerrymandered. In both of these cases, we have folks who are trying to get communications from the legislature in what they have sent back and forth with lobbyists as to their thinking behind legislation. And from Meekhoff's standpoint, I think what he's looking at is if we open the barn door to all communications that are going back and forth, what you're going to have is people misconstruing communications and emails between people that are just meant to be idea sharing, concepts, ideas on ways to go and possible thought processes behind those, and that could later be used in a court of law by somebody who doesn't like the legislation that ends up getting passed. And so you're creating a system where you're actually sabotaging yourself and the legislation you're trying to pass by releasing the open free flow of communications within a staff. So I understand what he's talking about. I'm not saying I agree one way or the other, but it's kind of an interesting look in to what is going on in the legislature and why Arlen Meekhoff has been so adamant to saying no to expanding the Freedom of Information Act to the state legislature. The governor's office, I suppose, a different matter, but as far as the legislature goes, I just don't think he wants to open it up to more potential suits down the line. Because as it is, he's having to fight back Tesla. He's having to fight back Mark Brewer. And in the case of Tesla, it's not him in particular. It's Joe Hewn. But nonetheless, it's still a legislative branch. And he's thinking, hey, listen, we can't have folks sticking their nose into our emails and our communications, changing the rules as we operate right now and applying them to what we did in the past, and then who knows what kind of laws could be opened up. Just kind of an interesting thing that I noticed, Jacob. And so thank you for letting me go on that rant. All right, let's go to the interview portion of this week's podcast with the head of the Michigan AFL-CIO. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, let's talk about the state of labor here on this Labor Day weekend. Where are we in the state of Michigan as it relates to organized labor?
Well, we're still standing strong. Since I've been here 2 years at the AFL, our number one priority has been to strengthen and grow. We just had a great organizing victory a couple weeks ago in Traverse City, of all places, not Flint or Detroit or even Lansing, but in Traverse City, the Michigan Nurses organized 1,000 new nurses into their union, who realized the power of joining together to stand up together and negotiate with for themselves to get a better standard of living for them and their families. So we're growing and strengthening. On top of that, in all honesty, outside of the labor movement, our work to find allies who are like-minded is since the last election has been easy work, frankly.
Well, and it seems like you have an ally in some issues with the new president, who's a Republican. Yes or no?
Which issues are you talking about?
I was thinking more trade issues, be it NAFTA or PPT.
We'll see. TPP, honestly, I give them credit for coming in and stopping it. Labor didn't get any credit when that got stopped, because had it not been for the fight that labor had put up and Democrats in Congress, TPP would have been already enacted, most likely. And we fought long and hard to keep that from happening. I'll give Donald Trump credit. He came in and did get rid of the TPP. NAFTA, I'm not so sure. He said he was going to have it done in 100 days. I wrote in an article that, where was it? And he'd spent more time on the golf course, I thought, than he had working on getting a new NAFTA deal. We'll see what it turns out to be. I know he came into this state and sold the bill of goods that he was going to get rid of NAFTA or fix it, but he keeps morphing his position. I think we need labor people, working people at that table to make sure that the right issues get addressed, and that's not a NAFTA that just helps business but helps bring back good jobs. During the campaign, how many times did you hear him talk about China and being a currency manipulator and how important that was to end that? The leader of China came shortly after he got elected. The next day, China currency manipulation was no longer an issue. I guess the Chinese head told him, no, that's not real, but all of a sudden that fell off the table. So we'll see. We need to hold his feet to the fire. We're calling balls and strikes on him. So far, he's striking out, in our opinion, but we'll see what he does on NAFTA. But the true story is going to be told about what's really in there if he gets a deal. We're not going to just accept what they say it is.
Well, let's go to more state issues at this point. The Civil Service Commission is going to be exploring some rule changes that would seem to restrict the amount of things that employee unions can bargain over. Have you guys taken a look at this, and where do you see these rules going?
We're looking at it right now. In fact, there's folks right down the hall from where we're sitting meeting on it and looking at what it's going to, the attack that it's going to be again on working people who happen to work in the state government. Working people deserve the freedom to negotiate a fair wage for the work that they do so they can take care of their families. And frankly, this is just another attack on that. I've heard them say it's trying to drive people down instead of bringing the ones who don't have those protections up. The excuse they've used is, well, the exempt workers don't have some of these protections. Well, they could give those to them. Why take away those protections from the people who have chosen to join together, to negotiate together? It's another senseless attack. They're just looking to take away the rights to people to bargain working conditions together and safety on the job. Some of these jobs are not safe jobs. They're people that go out and inspect bridges and things like that. I want people who are happy and satisfied in their work to do that. It's people who go out and work with the poor and the downtrodden in our communities. Those are dangerous jobs. We've had those workers get killed on the job. They ought to have the right to be able to negotiate together, have the freedom to negotiate those work and safety conditions that they work over.
Well, you could argue this is streamlining the process, though, and making it easier to negotiate wages and benefits for employees, because you're just taking certain things right off the table.
No, I'm not buying that one, Kyle. I've been in negotiations for 30 years, and it's not a, it's, you do it all, and it's not a, it's not an issue to try and get it all done. You negotiate working conditions, you negotiate wages, you negotiate benefits. It's all one package, and it all comes together. That this is simply another attack on people's freedom to be able to join together and negotiate together to be able to provide for their families. That's pure and simple.
Where do you think this is coming from?
Where I think it's coming from? I think that the governor appointed the people to this commission that he wanted to do this. I don't see any other way that, I mean, it's his appointees on there, and all of a sudden, I mean, to be honest, appointing Jace Bolger to that committee, the writing was on the wall. He said right out of the gate that he didn't think state employees even needed a union to represent them. Again, workers need the freedom to be able to band together and join together to negotiate together to get a fair return on their work to provide for their families. It's another direct attack. This is an easy one because they can do it with governor-appointed appointees to this Civil Service Commission. They don't have to take it through the legislature. We're not going to just stand for it. We are not going to cooperate in our own demise. Workers are going to stand up. This state has seen attack since 2010 when the Republicans came in and took a majority. Right out of the gate, $2 billion tax break for corporations that was paid for by raising taxes on working people. You got Flint Water, you got the Grand Rapids Veterans Home, you got this whole robo-fraud unemployment insurance debacle that the whole story on that has not been told. There's lives out there that have been ruined, and I don't know how they put some money into a pot to pay some people back, but I don't know how you can repair those people's lives. I don't know how you can ever repair the people's lives in Flint. My two grandbabies, my first and only two grandbabies, were born into that. They lived almost right downtown. And I don't know, you know, after all these debacles, I don't know how people expect people to just sit back and take it anymore, and I don't think people will.
You take a look at the controversies that have happened under Governor Snyder's tenure, and you mentioned several of them. I think we could also add corrections and the privatization of food service. It does seem like privatization seems to be a central theme here, whether you're talking about the Grand Rapids Veterans Home or even to an extent Flint Water, and where you're trying to cut costs to such an extent that it impacts quality. Do you think that that's going to be a theme that we're going to keep hearing throughout the year as we kind of gear up for this gubernatorial election?
You're going to keep hearing it from me, I'll guarantee you that. And people like me and people not that aren't just labor people. These are all attacks on the freedoms of people to be able to come together and work together to make things better for themselves. It's been a coordinated attack since 2010, and people are fed up with it. They're not going to take it anymore.
Speaking about the gubernatorial field, how do you see this thing kind of assess the field at this point? Obviously, we're 11 months away from a primary election on the Democratic side, but are you happy with the candidates that you're seeing right now, or do you think that the field should be expanded a bit?
I'm not in charge of expanding or determining the field. I'm happy with the candidates on the Democratic side. We'll see. It's a long process. I mean, our process here, it's early for us to be making decisions, and I don't have a crystal ball, but the unions that are affiliated with the AFL all have processes. They'll talk to all these candidates and make decisions, and when the time is right, we'll come together and make a decision. But yeah, I think there's strong candidates on the Democratic side.
Do you think it's too late for somebody else to get in to run for governor or not?
I don't think it's too late. There's plenty of time. This is early in the process. I can tell you this. I feel good sitting here assuming that we're going to back a Democrat. I would not want to be running as a Republican in this cycle after what we've talked about already, what the last 7 years will be, and probably what the rest of this year to Election Day will have coming for working people. People are ready for change. If you look at Governor Snyder's numbers, they're down. Governor Snyder could not win re-election. Brian Kelly would be a third term of Governor Snyder, and I don't think people are going to want that. Bill Schuette's got a long record. He's a career politician, has been running for office for a long, long time, and we're going to make sure people know his record. In Congress, he voted against Buy American provisions that would have that opened the door to, it was for infrastructure projects, there were Buy American provisions, and he voted against that, opened the door to things like cheap China steel coming in. In the state legislature, he voted for a $500 million tax, or not tax cut, but a cut to education. He's got a long record, and we're going to make sure people know it.
What do you want to hear from a Democratic gubernatorial candidate in the months coming up here? What kind of message you hope that they're going to share or you want to hear?
Well, for us, it's that they're going to have working people's backs when it comes to labor issues that come up in the legislature. Workers deserve the freedom to join together and negotiate together to earn a fair return on their work. And there's a lot of labor issues that come up. That's the process for us. It's talking to these candidates, finding out where they stand on our issues, and we're going to look for someone that we know is going to have our back and that is serious and can run a campaign that will win.
Very good. Ron Bieber, he's the president of AFL-CIO here in the state of Michigan. Thanks for joining us on the podcast this week.
Thank you, Kyle. Thanks for having me.
And that's going to do it for this week's edition of the MERS Monday podcast. Special thanks to Ron Bieber and Zach Pohl from the AFL-CIO for this year's update on organized labor. And also like to thank AT&T, our sponsors, for sponsoring this and all our other podcasts. For Jacob Kanzler, I'm Kyle Malin, editor of the MERS newsletter. Thanks for tuning in for this week's podcast.